So Neuromancer, is it an ongoing series or is it a mini-series?
We started off with a mini-series. I mean, it's a fairly kind of a strange idea, an out of the idea. I think back in the day, quite for the series I did for DC and Vertigo, a number of people, I like when Vertigo do short series, see if it snags, see if it works, see if it catches zeitgeist, if you like. And so 6 episodes is kind of, you can get a story out there, you can get the idea, you can get the characters established, and then step back and see what you've got. And that's what we're doing.
So you've done it as like a 6-issue burst initially, and then we'll see what happens, basically.
Yeah, and probably what happens is nothing. But it doesn't matter, because it would have been a really worthwhile 6 episode story. And so far, I'm really happy with it. And a lot of people, the reaction's been really positive. So, you know. We shall see.
I mean, he seems to have been cut from a similar cloth to someone like sort of Jamie Hewlett. He seems to be in the same similar. Well, that's a fair comment.
Britt Parson is, I think, he would say that his influences were Jamie and Philip Bond.
Yes.
And, you know, that's cool for sure.
Mm.
But it's slightly, obviously, he's younger and he's
in the generation.
But yeah, I don't think that's a criticism. I think you would say that's completely true.
Yes.
I think that, you know, when Jamie and Philip were two fantastic artists.
Yes.
They are fantastic artists. And he's deeply influenced by them, which I think is great, because, so I think that is the case, and he's just perfect with this, story. The trick with these kind of stories, like New Romancer, is getting the tone right. It can be too cutesy and too saccharine, and I find that disgusting, and I really hate that. But also it can get too wacky, and then you lose the humanity, you lose the character. And Brett seems to have an ability to just catch the pitch just right.
Is it about the essence of humanity, for lack of a better word, about the soul of the people that have been brought back, if you like?
It's about obsession. It's also about romance and about the horror, or the potential horror, of actually meeting the person of your dreams. Is that a good thing, or should that person remain in your dreams? And here's a girl who's kind of weird, but adorable and lovely, but hurt, who actually, by dint of like Ada Lovelace, weird weather, and her own, and our hero's own genius, gets to meet this person who, in normal life, remained just a dream, just a figment of your hopes and dreams. She actually meets him. And clearly, as you'll see in episode 2 and 4, he is flesh and blood.
Mm.
And flesh and blood people fart and belch and want to do bodily things.
Yes.
And we don't quite necessarily fit in with her pristine, beautiful, childlike dreams.
Is it about exploding that whole Victorian romance myth?
It's like you put your dream lover on a pedestal. A New Romancer, dream lover, gets off the pedestal, farts, and says, that's what I say.
But it's also Byron.
I mean, part of this is my obsession with Lord Byron. I've always been really interested in Lord Byron. I don't think he's the best poet ever. I don't think he's the best poet we've produced in this country. But I think he's, as a personality, there was an argument that he was the first pop star.
Because he was larger than life and the whole Byronic
era. He was really aware of his own personality. And how to, you know. I like the fact that he had this club book. Someone once said, this is a great flaw. Well, not for him. Said, yeah, but I mean, in terms of a character. Because he had this person with a beautiful face.
Yes.
But also, Roger Stafat is a kind of like great lover of women, but probably prefer boys. Then you have this kind of like, this guy who's kind of dressed up in this Albanian, but actually has this limping club foot. So it's a mass of contradictions and conflicts, which make him a really interesting character.
Totally, it's quite a light book. You're going to be tackling some more complex issues, presumably.
Well, I think that's what I like, that we're dealing with complex, deep issues, like father and daughter relationships. Lexi has a complex relationship with her father. Lord Byron, to say he had a complex relationship with Ada is hard to say, because in the sense he had no relationship other than in his own mind and in his own heart.
Mm.
But there's still a relationship. So in one of the things is the relationship between mothers and their fathers. Another is the relationship between someone who loves someone, and then the reality, the difference between perceived love and reality. And these themes get dark. I like the fact that we're using a fairly light, frothy, rom-com, supernatural rom-com way to do it. I mean, it would have been easy and perhaps more typical of me to really go dark and really go into the kind of like the, really go into the
Gothic
stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, so I like the fact that we're choosing a light touch to examine this very dark stuff. And I think that brings out a kind of tension in the book, which is not dissimilar to the kind of tension I was talking about with Lord Byron, where he had this massive contradictions. You know, this is a book. This is a light, frothy, funny, beautiful, sunny book about dark, deep, serious stuff.
What's the continued fascination, not only for you, but I'm talking generally, with sort of romantic poets?
What makes them interesting to us
yes.
is the thing that makes them and interesting to our hero, Alexei. I think they represented something, an idea, while they were, obviously, it's romantic. Yes. They wouldn't have considered themselves romantic.
No.
That would not have been a term they would have used for themselves.
But coins.
Afterwards.
Afterwards.
As often this is the case.
Yes.
Well, I think there's a number of reasons. I think it's wrapped up in our dreams of pre-industrial Britain.
Yes, yes.
And I think, but, you know, and there were a couple of bloody good poets. I mean, Byron, with powerful force,
he's
wrapped up with Shelley, was he was obviously much more radical in terms of his politics. So there was a bunch of kind of like interesting poets at the same time. And obviously, if it had been a few hundred years later, they'd have all gone to America. Yeah. They would have been the British invasion.
No, exactly, yes. So using the lighter tone is a way for you to tell quite a dark story, though it's not quite so gothic and windswept, and give it that kind of lightness of touch, basically.
It's a souffle. Yes. It really fills you up. It's great fun writing Lord Byron and writing his dialogue and seeing these two people meet.
Yes.
The person who's in love. But obviously it gets stranger, and as the story goes on, we have other demon lovers or dark lovers who appear, like Casanova. He's another character who really fascinated. It's fascinated me for a long time. An amazingly interesting character. His autobiography, The Story of My Life, is obviously it's full of lies and it's full of
propaganda,
Pocadamo and Voltaire. Yes, and self-promulgation, but even so, you get a whiff of the gutter of that. It's an interesting character. I'm doing him a bit of a disservice in this book, but that's okay. It's my book and what I want of him.
How do you avoid the danger of the Blackadder trap when you have this is Dr. Johnson and we're going to meet him and he's going to be sort of a caricature? How do you make them a living, breathing character?
That is the trick. Blackadder, not my favourite programme, but he did what he did really well, but that had a remit.
Obviously it was a comedic programme, which was very different. Yes.
It was about comedy.
Yeah.
But with a little bit of satire.
Yes.
A bit of anti-First World War and anti-establishment.
Yes.
Like lip service to it, if you like. Well, I think what we try to do is make sure that we have an idea of what the story's about, and we make sure that the characters are on theme about great lovers and on theme about the difference between the reality and the dream of something. And so that's the theme that's running through the book. And then this is a case of trying to, even like Casanova, he is a bad guy. He's our bad guy in it. But he's a bad guy in a really interesting kind of way, and kind of quite kind of like him a bit, even though he's insane.
Is it because he's a lovable rogue?
I think lovable's probably pushing it a bit.
Well, maybe not likeable, perhaps.
Interesting.
Yeah. What's the one-line pitch about the discipline?
A dark, erotic, psychological thriller set in New York, about a woman who's dissatisfied with her life. She seems to have everything on the surface. She's from a blue-collar background.
Okay.
Her family's still there in this blue-collar world. But she, through her looks, intelligence, she married a guy who's a banker. They seem to have everything. But she's dissatisfied with her life, and which makes a perfect fodder, if you like, for this group of people who send someone out to try to seduce her, to lure her into this world, this dark, strange world. So it's a book about transformations, a book about metamorphosis, and I've always been interested in those people who. This is not my short one-line pitch.
That's fine, it doesn't have to be.
I've always been interested in those people who have to straddle two worlds, or two types of people, have to be more than one person.
Mm.
You know, like the person who comes from the blue-collar world, but transforms himself into something else and something different, and in some ways, and that's what she has done. This Melissa, our hero, and she has to do it in a much more literal way now because she gets sucked into this strange, dark, erotic, perverse world.
So it is to use that horrible term, but she gets involved basically like a demi-monde.
Totally sure, yeah.
It's different to the world that she inhabited before,
and it changes her. And to begin with, she thinks it's about sex, and she finds out fairly quickly that it's not about sex. Sex is just a part of this ritual that gets her into this world, and actually sex is what's been used rather than the end game.
So it's like a carrot for the end.
Yeah, well, normally in books and films, sex is the end game. Is the goal, and we presume it is here as well, but we find that it's a very different, much weirder, much darker, much stranger, and much more scary.
And so it pursues concepts you've always been fascinated with, you know, the extremist, or even things like Shade, about kind of human identity and obviously sexual identity.
Yeah, I mean, if they're the things that interest you, they're the things that interest you.
Yes.
So I trick you to try to find new ways of exploring these themes, and so you can hopefully arrive at slightly different answers, and that's what we're trying to do.
Leandros was on Punisher, wasn't it, and some other sort of books.
And also the names,
of course. So it's a different.
Well, you couldn't get any more different from a Brit.
No, as I was thinking, so the contrast.
Well, which is great. I mean, I have kind of like today, I've done a bit of notes on the discipline.
Yes.
And I've also looked through New Romancer. And it's so schizophrenic.
Yeah. You enjoy the contrast.
Well, yeah, really.
Having two very different series.
Love that. I mean, I love it. I mean, in some ways, it really just forces you. It makes you realise what this world is and what that world is.
Yes. I mean, the question as a writer.
Yes, because you choose the tone of a story based on what you want to say in that story, and it's not an accident. And the tone of the story of our discipline is what we have, you know, because it needs to be that way, because it is a dark, sexual, erotic story, because that's what the world is that she enters, and that is her inner landscape, is that as well. And it's the landscape which has changed, and it's a very different kind of inner landscape from Lexi in New Romancer. I mean, she has a very different idea of sex, very different idea of love. She's younger, and she's less experienced, and therefore that colours her entire world view.
But also, New Romancer, the world that she lives in seems quite kind of benevolent, if you like.
I think it seems to be benevolent at the beginning. I think that, I wouldn't say exactly that the technology is benevolent in New Romancer, but I would say that there is hope.
Yes.
That it might give you what you want. And clearly, Lexi's trying to use the technology to get what she really wants. And where she gets what she really wants...
Is it what she really wants? It's one of those questions, of course, yes.
And most of us are, thankfully, not in the position to really meet what we really want.
Discipline, how many parts is this?
Again, the idea is you would do 6 parts, and then all things being equal, we'll do another storyline after that, you know. So, and keep on going. If it catches an interest, if it catches fire, we'll do another storyline afterwards. I've got lots of stories. It creates a world and a character which has lots of possibilities, let's put it that way.
The comic industry currently, what are your thoughts?
Very different. In the early 90s, there was a real sense of explosion. There was a real sense of people were looking at this art form in a different way. And there was lots of possibilities of doing things which hitherto you may not have been able to do in comics. I think it's like people's idea of what comics are and what they should be doing has changed slightly. And obviously, I mean, you have the games, which I think it's perhaps taken a lot of people's imagination. And also the movies, who are doing so many comic films, where one would be forgiven. There was an argument being made that some people see comics merely as a kind of feeder team to help out the film industry. And I've always thought that done well, done right, a comic book can do what nothing else can do. I think that's what's interesting.
You still feel that about the best of comics?
In the medium, the comic book itself,
yes.
How it's perceived, how it's advertised, how it's used may have changed. A comic book as a comic book is still 22 pages or 20 pages of images and words. It still can do something which is as valid as anything else.
I wanted to talk to you a bit about class. I mean, we talked about this a long time ago when I first interviewed you.
Class?
You came from a working class background. Right. Is that a fair comment?
Well, I was born on a council flat. So
But you've moved up into, I mean, this is quite a kind of suburban part of East Finchley.
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, it's going to most of us go north.
Yeah, so I just think, is it interesting that you've moved into a slightly different sphere?
I have arguments with my wife, or jokes with my wife.
Yeah.
I say I'm still working class.
Yes.
So you're not, not anymore. I remember I was waiting, I was going to go to the doctor's, and I was a bit early.
Yes.
And I went to a cafe.
Yes.
What's the word for my doctor's?
Yes.
And there's a walk, it's a cap.
Yeah, like a working man's cap, basically.
It's like a working man's cap. And, and I looked around and I thought, okay, I'm back to my working class roots, back to my blog.
Yes.
I'm all right. And I looked, there was two other guys. One was reading The Star.
Yes.
There's another guy reading The Sun, and I was reading the Guardian Arts column. And I thought, all right.
Maybe I have,
and point program, you know. I was university.
Was it unusual?
I was the first one.
So, I mean, what was it just something you always had in you, like an innate interest in things like that?
No, I was interested in art and writing and reading.
So what kindled that as a kid for you?
It's interesting. I was more of a loner.
Really?
I think I was quite interested in being, or even though I had that working class kind of buff and tumble about it.
Yes.
And I quite enjoyed that. There was also a part of me that wanted to separate from it and not be like the others. And I wasn't like the others.
It never caused any problems?
No, I wasn't a problem. Because I was never kind of scared of it.
No, fair enough.
My idea was always, if you don't like it, I'm fuck you.
Yes.
Mm. I'm interested in the working class sphere.
There is still a class barrier in this country, isn't there? There's still a...
Class exists 100%.
And it's never going to go away, I
still see, like, people who, from a middle class background and perhaps from a wealthy or upper middle class background, they have things going for them, which working class people don't have.
I mean, obviously my family were middle class, but you know, it hasn't helped me.
We've gone in opposite directions, haven't we, really?
Well, kind of. You know, I went to public school. My English teacher was great because we did Death of a Salesman. I think we did What the Butler Saw.
Oh, cool.
We did some great stuff. We did Brighton Rock as well, which kind of opened my eyes when I was 15. Mm. you know, and I thought, wow, what an amazing book.
I had to get out of school with the correct book, didn't
it? Well, yeah. Was it comprehensive you went to?
Yeah, when I was talking about the discipline. Yeah. I think in how Melissa, our hero, comes from a blue-collar background.
Yes.
And I was interested
in... Did you tap into a little bit your working-class background?
I was very interested in those people who straddle two worlds.
Yes.
And more it is the common experience. It's the everyday experience that people happen to. They come from one background, from one ethnicity perhaps, from one class, and they are now in a different one. And more, I think people are... It's a more of a complex sense of selfdom or self-perception. And I think where in times gone by, I think people could pull one thing. I think more.
Is it easier for people to move, say, from, I don't know, working class to middle class now than it was, I don't know, 40 or 50 years ago?
I think there's a perception that it's easier.
But what's the truth, though?
I think that's the real class battle. Well, I think the class has got more complex as well. I think, obviously, it used to be professional and working class and working, but obviously now you can have people who are in inverted commas working class who earn good money as a plumber. One of my brothers is a taxi driver.
Oh, okay. He obviously does pretty decently.
Yeah. He does decently, yeah. Works hard, but decently,
yes.
Yeah.
You know, still, I guess it still informs what you do, even now.
Oh, so definitely.
You know.
And I'm also quite interested now, I guess, working class characters, because I'm more interested in their experience, I think.
Is it more interesting because they've had to kind of struggle to use that hoary old chestnut?
Yes, they've seen more than one world, they've seen a different world. I mean, I'm particularly interested in those working class characters who struggle and not get out of their working class background, because there's nothing wrong with it, but have, by dint of what they do, have entered into different worlds.
You know, you've got people like Michael Caine, obviously, who started in a working class background, and I guess he'd call himself middle class now.
I'm not quite sure what you call him.
Possibly, I'm not sure.
What class is it?
Well, I don't know.
Call himself working class.
Has the perception of the term working class changed?
They're kind of fake, obviously, mockney, you know,
yes.
Kind of like public school boys in Chelsea with glottal stops.
Yes. I mean, Blur obviously were from Essex, but they did a bit.
Glottal stops.
Yeah.
I mean, everything from skin.
Yes.
To, you know, lots of other stuff I've done. There's been a working class element in it, I think.
No.
But, you know, it's my
life. Because even Constantine was basically a working class magician, effectively.
Well, yeah, I mean, I loved writing.
I thought it was a great run, by the way.
Thank you. When I got the hang of it, it took me a few episodes. I mean, the problem about that was that, the first storyline was going to be a one-off storyline. And they said, do you want to do a Constantine story? I said, that's great, yeah. So I had this idea of a four-part story or whatever.
Yes.
And then it's, as typical in comics, great, can I just do it this week?
Yes.
So I didn't, if I knew from the outset I was going to have a run, I would have obviously wanted to take all the books ever written and spent a lot of time going away.
Mm.
As it was, I had to kind of do skim read a lot of books. I hadn't read everyone religiously. I read the original ones and something else. You know, so I dipped back in and out, you know. But I think storyline, I think it settled down, and I think I had his voice. I knew his voice. And I knew his mentality. I remember talking to one person just before I started writing, and he said, all you have to remember about Constantine is he's a bastard. I always thought that was wrong. It was a misconception. I mean, I've known some bastards. He's not a bastard. I have known some bastards, and he's not a bastard. His tragedy is that he may do bastard-like things.
But for good reason.
Yeah, well, he'll feel it, though. He's not without a moral compass.
Mm.
I think that moral compass is just a bit all over the place. There is a kind of softness to Constantine.
Yeah. I don't know if you can answer this question, but they've changed the character and they've introduced him into the DC universe. Have you read any of the more recent runs?
I found it wasn't really for me. It was like watching your girlfriend going out with another guy.
I can see that.
Yeah, so it had been fantastic getting it depressed with me. Mm. Because, I don't know. And if it had been really rubbish, that would have been depressed with me as well. So I might just absent myself. One of the arguments I heard when they moved over was that it was confusing for readers to have him in Hellblazer, like in Vertigo. Well,
and then also
in DCU. Always thought that that's a specious kind of argument. Yes. Is it for comic book readers?
They accept all kind of weird shit, basically. They can accept, you know, freedom of kind of Superman, exactly.
Reboots, continuities, Elseworlds. One thing that comic book readers are good at is balancing up concepts which are exclusively impossible. So I thought that was a quite fairly specious kind of argument, and a wrong argument. And I think it would have been quite possible to have had a Vertigo kind of Constantine going on, and a DCU. I mean, look, maybe he'd do great things over there. Obviously, it started out as that.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, it did start out that way. It wasn't as though it had always been, you know. So, you know, maybe he's found his natural home again after going AWOL a while and going playing naughty. Maybe he's gone back home to his natural home. I don't know.
As you've got older, as a writer, has the way work changed, or has it got easier or harder to kind of put the time in for this stuff?
Or God, that's right. If I don't like doing something, I don't do it, or I'll get out of it as quickly as possible. So I mean, the trick is to do stories that interest you. And if you're doing stories that interest you, what's the problem? You know, I mean, you're doing stuff that interests you. The research is interesting. The writing is interesting. You know, I mean, so if that doesn't interest you, do something else.
Yes. I mean, you were pursuing some film projects.
Yeah.
Do you still dip your toe in occasionally?
Yeah, I'm continuing to do that at the moment. Yeah.
Is it because it gives you variety to be able?
Variety. There are different stories. I mean, I'm working on some other projects outside of comics. You know, so I keep busy, and comics are still great. I mean, had the reception might change slightly, and there may be difficulties in terms of sales. It's competing with so much other stuff.
Mm.
But just as a piece of potential artwork, it still has the power to kind of do things which nothing else can do. It might not do it as much, but it still has the potential.
Do you think there are writers now who were influenced by what you and, say, Grant were doing 20-something years ago?
It's part of the language, I think, now.
So it's basically the language obviously being rewritten so that other writers and other creators are using similar themes and concepts.
Things evolve, and I think I was a small part of that big, or maybe a big part of the English.